Cosmic Shed.
You're listening to The Cosmic Shed, a show that explores the way science and storytelling collide.
We'll be talking about films, books, music, theatre, TV, and anything else that catches our curiosity. From rigorously accurate science fact to ridiculously speculative science fiction.
We don't want to nitpick, but to celebrate the ways science and art can complement and enrich each other.
Mostly, we just want to talk about nerdy things that make us happy.
We've decided to do all of this from a crumbling garden shed somewhere in suburban Bristol.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between. Hello, and welcome to a special bonus episode of The Cosmic Shed. I'm Andrew, and with me today is...
Ben.
And Ben and I have been to the Doctor Who Symphonic Spectacular in Cardiff. That was the Oodcast, not from the Symphonic Spectacular, but a brilliant Doctor Who podcast. You'll be hearing more from them later on in this episode. And you'll also be hearing from Professor Bruce Drinkwater, who is Professor of Ultrasonics at the University of Bristol.
But first, we're at the Symphonic Spectacular, which was pretty spectacular.
Indeed it was, yeah, what a great show.
Yeah, some beautiful music from the house band of Doctor Who, as they describe themselves.
The BBC National Orchestra of Wales.
And some visuals from the show, some costumes. They had lots of people in different monster costumes, Peter Davidson, comparing.
You know, I was excited about the concert, but it was actually much better than I thought it was going to be. It's all the Murray Gold music. He's the guy that's been writing music since The Doctor came back in 2005. The way they put the show together was it was brilliant. I like the way that they drew your eye to the orchestra quite a lot, and the orchestra were made really part of the show as much as the screen and Peter Davidson and all the monsters and things around.
It's quite a short tour of the UK, so by the time this comes out, you've probably missed your chance to see it, so we're just bragging, really, at this point, as we usually do. But if it comes back to the UK or any other parts of the world, I know it's been to Australia as part of the tour, yeah, we'd highly recommend it.
Definitely. And we weren't the only people to see the show, and we managed to speak to a few people while we were there.
Hello, my name is Michael Garvey. I'm the director of the BBC National Orchestra and Chorus of Wales. Everyone knows Doctor Who for the amazing special effects and the Doctor and the regeneration and the TARDIS and all that kind of stuff. But the music, actually, is one of those kind of hidden bits that you'd miss if it weren't there. And tonight's show, this entire production, is all about putting the orchestra, the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, which are the house band, if you like, Doctor Who's house band, centre stage, and allowing people to understand and see and enjoy the music as much as they enjoy the television programme itself. When you're watching the television programme on Saturday night on BBC One, this orchestra is the one that's recorded the soundtrack, usually a couple of months earlier, actually in a recording studio, only about 300 metres from the Doctor Who film set.
Hi, my name's John.
My name's Alex.
We've been big Doctor Who fans for a long, long time.
And I see the music live.
I'm Nadine. I'm originally from Germany, but I live in Ireland.
Hi, I'm Natalie. I'm from Germany, and I was invited by my friend Nadine here to just come along to this absolutely amazing thing about Doctor Who, and it's just great.
I came as Matt Smith, the 11th Doctor. We decided to go because we always like the music. We're always listening to it somewhere. I didn't really follow the music until we sort of started listening to it in the car.
Yeah.
And then the more I've listened to it, the more I like it. Because you don't really notice it in the episodes. But then when you've got just the music on, you can lose yourself in that as
well.
Yeah,
you can.
And you always get lost. You realise not everything's not that bad.
No.
I'm Marie.
And I'm Becky.
We have some friends that are involved in the show this evening, so you thought we'd come down and support.
Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Julia.
We love Doctor Who.
Hi, I'm Josh. I love Doctor Who and the music as well. It's awesome. I play in a brass band as well, so that's a big part of it as well. So I have a lot of appreciation for live music. And it's just, you can't really miss it, to be honest. I mean, the music doesn't get any better than Doctor Who music. I think it's amazing. I think he's a really good composer, and obviously with Ben Foster alongside him, I think he's kind of brought it into the modern age, because I think with a lot of like the Dealey Derbyshire stuff with the key on the piano strings to make the TARDIS noise, I think that was very revolutionary. But I think now with all the electronic stuff, bringing that into it, I think he's done a fantastic job.
My name is Connor, and I came here because I watch Doctor Who and I like it. It's been on 50 years, and I think it's so popular because you can go to, in time, like, you can go to anywhere you want.
I think it's mostly the escapism. Like, even like, no matter how your day's going, you'll watch an episode of Doctor Who and you'll feel brilliant by the end of it.
I think it's the format they came up with to start. It was such a great format of that they could change the actors every so often. They could change that and change everything completely, but it's still the same character, everything. And, like, it just connects with people, sort of trying to make people feel better and prove that they can be who they want to be. Everyone is unique and everyone's important, that kind of thing. That's what it teaches.
It's unique. It's creatively exciting. The kind of specialness, if you like, or the kind of the backstory. There's a backstory. The Whovians out there who go into to where the Doctor came from, and Gallifrey, and all that kind of stuff. That's what gives it its appeal, I think. It's deeper than just being a Saturday evening television programme.
I think time travel is such an interesting topic anyway. I mean, my parents are huge, huge fans, and they have been,
it's
you
a
know,
real
since way back.
Following.
Yeah.
It's a thing that amazes equally young and old, and there are always new fans growing with the series, and when it came back in 2005, I think it made a lot of new fans. When I came to it, not in 2005, a bit later, but it took me like 3 episodes and bam, and just hit me. So yeah, I'm stuck with it.
It's a perfect combination of being funny and being really smart and witty, dark.
I think because it speaks to a lot of people. I think obviously it speaks to a lot of people who like science fiction, but then it also speaks to people's morals as well, with what the Doctor does, you know, helping people that he's never met before, that he never gains anything from helping them apart from a sense of pride and satisfaction. And knowing that he helped those people, I think that speaks to a lot of people. I know it speaks to me. I think it's just a universal thing that everyone will sit down and watch Doctor Who Christmas special. It's just a given. It goes with the presents and the Christmas tree, I think, nowadays.
I just felt watching the 50th, because of my age, it spanned my lifetime. And that was quite surreal to sit and watch with my two sons. That was a very, very special moment. Hence why we're in tears earlier. Because he's off to uni soon. To study science.
Is that in any way inspired by watching science fiction?
I think so, yeah. I've always liked science from a child, really. And I think Doctor Who has been that, oh, you know, science, you know, Doctor. I think a lot of it is like the investment in characters. So everyone has their own Doctor. So I'm sure you have your Doctor that you grew up with. Obviously, mine will be different. I mean, mine's David Tennant. He was the one who I grew up watching.
Tom Baker is my Doctor, but I still like all the new ones as well. We just met Peter Capaldi today.
I think
and he was like, great.
Yeah, we met him today. Yeah.
They were filming at Canal Park in Cardiff, so we went down there and
Jenna Coleman
and Ingrid Oliver all come over, and we got their autographs and met them and had photos and everything. So
and they were really lovely.
He's really good.
Yeah, really approachable
as
well.
Peter Capaldi's a really nice guy.
He's like an icon, I think. He's sort of like totally British as well.
Like back when Doctor Who was being made in the 80s and 70s, and when you look at the 80s sci-fi coming out of America, it was probably superior money being put into it, so it was the quality that better. But I think now it's all on a par. We've got it just as good. So it's like that's why it's sort of spreading all over the world and gaining popularity and everything. I think it's going to keep going.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great.
I think it's the idea behind regeneration. You know, also you've got the time machine, which you can travel to any time, space, any time in history. I'd love to have a TARDIS in the back garden. Popping in every now and again.
I'd love my house to be a TARDIS, because my house is so small. I would love it if inside it suddenly was a lot bigger.
I've had the privilege actually of being on the set when it's being filmed and being inside the real TARDIS. And it is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. It's amazing.
I would love the TARDIS to be true. It would be the perfect thing.
I would go back and rewatch The Doctor, because I got into Doctor Who really late and I really regret it. So yeah, I would go back, maybe not 50 years, but a bit.
First thing that I would do, I know she hates me for it, but really. I would definitely go to see a Queen concert with Freddie Mercury.
Meeting Mozart, that'd be quite cool to meet him and talk to him about how he you know, came about loving music and stuff like that. Just to be able to go back and see history, how it was. And then, because that made you appreciate things more, you know, going all the way back to, you know, the start of time, to real historical points.
I'm so clumsy. The thought of you going back in time and you, like, treading on a bug and it changing the world or something, you know, that would be scary.
Time travel would be a nasty one to do, because you could just keep changing everything, couldn't you? That'd be terrible. So I don't think you should bring that in.
No, definitely not.
But it'd be nice to just actually have him looking after the world.
Yeah, he should be Prime Minister or President or whatever.
Either time travel or the sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, I think the sonic for me would be more useful.
What would you do with a sonic screwdriver if you had one?
I couldn't really tell you. That would be incriminating. I've got obviously the fake one just there, but that's about the closest it gets at the minute is turning off TVs when people are watching it. That's quite cool.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant to have a sonic screwdriver. I've got a couple. I've got one for the Wii. That works. And I've got some screwdrivers that don't work sonically. But I was doing some searching and I found that today, the 29th of May, which is when we're recording, the University of Bristol put out a press release. The title of the press release is Microscopic Sonic Screwdriver Invented.
Microscopic sonic screwdriver invented?
Exactly my thought. The title of the paper in the scientific journal is Observation of Orbital Angular Momentum Transfer from Bessel-shaped Acoustic Vortices to Diphasic Liquid Microparticle Mixtures. So I got in touch, and the man behind it is Professor Bruce Drinkwater. And, well, I had to go and see him.
So the main thing in the press release is about an acoustic vortex. So we've got sound waves that have got a spinning wavefront. So, you know, we liken it to a tornado of sound. So you've got this sound that's spinning, and that's that spinning sound wave can pass on its momentum to other objects like fluid. So if it was in air, so your gas, that would cause the air to swirl. If it was in water, it would cause the water to swirl. And if there were objects in there, it would cause them to move around, potentially grab them and twist them. So we looked at that and we thought, well, isn't that very much like one of the functionalities of a sonic screwdriver? Clearly we've not, you know, invented the whole lot, because the sonic screwdriver is a device that can do pretty much anything the scriptwriter cares to decide that it can do. And so it's quite multifaceted. The reason we're interested in these acoustic vortices is because you can use them to grab particles, grab things and move them around. So we quite often refer to this as an acoustic tweezer. And this is all happening at a really small scale. So the sort of objects I'm talking about are you know, things of the same sort of size as the human hair and less than that. Actually, one thing we used was household flour, which has got a wide range of different sizes, but they're all on the micron scale. So we'd liken this to a watchmaker's sonic screwdriver. So for undoing those really, really small screws that the doctor might be interested in undoing. But we can create this rotational momentum, and we can apply this at a distance. So we can do, if I'm sitting one side of a desk, you're the other side of the desk, potentially you could reach across and pick a lock in your pocket, in principle.
So did you actually see this microscopic sonic screwdriver?
No, I didn't, because, well, it's working at, well, a microscopic scale, so you can't see it. He's actually...
In a microscope, you could see it.
Yeah, he didn't have it in his office. That's probably in the lab. But I did see a picture of it, and we can post that picture on our site as well. But you can see it is... The way he describes it as a tornado, I think, is quite a helpful way of visualising it. I couldn't see it, but I did ask Bruce if he was actually trying to invent a sonic screwdriver.
We haven't set out, didn't get a research project on creating Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver. We were trying to make devices to grab and move cells. So if you're a biologist or anyone in the biomedical profession dealing with cells, looking at them under a microscope, you'd like to be able to grab them and move them around easily. At the moment, there are sort of various ways of poking them and prodding them, but basically it's really quite hard. A lot of it is you look at it and that is what you've got. Whereas here, with these vortices, you can potentially use the vortex to trap something, grab it, and then move it around. And as a byproduct of that, we think the things that we've developed look a lot like what one might imagine Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver looks like. The unanswered question is, how much force can you apply? And to be honest, we don't know the answer to that question. I mean, the work that we've just shown is all about manipulating and twisting things on a microscopic level where you don't have to apply much force at all. Others have shown that you can scale up these ideas, but again, the forces that people have applied with these devices are relatively low, but there's no reason why you couldn't crank up the force and apply more force and have these things acting over longer distances. Just as an aside, they use ultrasound and as a directional loudspeaker, so that's in directional loudspeaker technology, because it creates a beam that goes pretty much in the direction that you point it in, and then you can modulate the ultrasound with an audible signal. So if I point this device at you, then even if you were 10, 20 metres away, you can hear what's being broadcast, what's being modulated on the ultrasonic wave. But someone either side of you couldn't, because the ultrasound has to be there to carry the wave in the first place. So the fact that ultrasound beams can travel large distances, that's known. We know that.
No one's
really tried to propagate these acoustic vortices long distances. I don't think there's any physics stopping that from happening. Depending on how far you'd like it to project, you need more energy. So you might need to be carrying a backpack full of batteries for it to have enough energy to reach across the table. I think the bit that's unknown is what level of force could we get the device to apply over what distances. So, it's all well and good for me to say, in principle, it's possible. Definitely something is possible. Distances of metres, small amounts of force are definitely possible. And we and others have shown that. But where the exact limits are. I mean, in air, for example, eventually, if your ultrasonic pressure waves are too high in amplitude, they start to tear the air apart. So there's a kind of an upper limit to the pressure that air can take. Although that's for simple normal acoustic waves where there's compression expansion. I don't know if it's known what the upper limit for an acoustic vortex is. Be quite interesting to find out if somebody would care to fund me to do that. And I might do it anyway, just for fun. Then I think you could do that. I guess the thing is, would this functionality of causing things to be able to rotate at a distance, that's obviously one of the things that the sonic screwdriver can do amongst lots. Would it be worth creating a sonic screwdriver that can do, has only that functionality and not these other things, all the more miraculous things? That's the question. But I don't know. If it was, then I don't think there's any physics that stops you from doing it.
We're in the future now. We've got the sonic screwdriver. What are we going to do next? What thing from science fiction would you like to see in reality?
A lot of science fiction ideas seem completely impossible. Of course, I'd love to have things like time travel and all the rest of it, but I like the bringing extinct species back to life, particularly dinosaurs. I love that idea, and it seems possible. Although it's been said that for quite a lot of years now, that we're just on the verge of being able to bring back woolly mammoths to life, and I guess if you can do that, then potentially, although I think the DNA degrades, doesn't it? That's where woolly mammoths have got the edge, isn't it? Because things like elephants are quite closely related to them, and dinosaurs are, well, I suppose you've got crocodiles and things like that, haven't you? And you've got some things that look a bit like dinosaurs.
Yeah. Are you seriously suggesting that we get a crocodile and make it into a T-Rex?
Well, with the aid of a sonic screwdriver, why not?
Thank you so much to Professor Bruce Drinkwater for speaking to us today. What an amazing guy he is, and we're definitely getting him back because he told me about another thing that he's working on which is not yet published. I'm not going to tell. I can't tell you what it is, but it's goodness. Amazing. It's amazing.
Is it a flux capacitor?
No, think Star Trek. Anyway, thank you, Bruce, and thank you very much to everybody.
Is it a replicator?
Just leave it. I can't tell you what it is.
My cup of tea, like Captain Picard. So tired of boiling a kettle. I just want to replicate it.
Yeah, no, it's not that, sadly. And thank you very much to everybody involved in the fantastic symphonic spectacular show. I mean, thank you so much. That was it made up for Doctor Who not being on the telly for a bit. And also, thank you very much to Natalie and Nadine, and you heard a bit from them earlier. They're also part of a podcast.
It's called Nashcast. You get it at Nashcast Network on Twitter, and it's all about anything geeky, anything weird. Like recently we had a podcast about the zombie apocalypse, and anything really. What would you say? It's awesome. You should totally listen to it.
It's total fun.
Yeah,
it really
it's
is.
Great fun.
And massive thanks to everyone who spoke to us. We asked everyone,
what do they watch when Doctor Who isn't on the television? A lot of people said Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Battlestar Galactica, and of course, what's that other one? Stephen Moffat?
It's quite obscure. I don't think many people watch it.
Is it Elementary? Is that it?
That's the one.
Yeah, Sherlock. And one person said Arrow, and I agreed with them.
But most people feel pretty bereft when Doctor Who isn't on the TV. And most people said something like this.
Reruns of DVDs of Doctor Who. It's the only thing you can watch, really.
But what I like to do when Doctor Who isn't on the television is listen to the Oodcast. So we heard a bit from them before, but...
How does the Oodcast work?
They review each episode of Doctor Who, really. But the way they do it is they write sketches, haikus, songs, everything, really. It's a smorgasbord of creativity.
Wow. Multimedia extravaganza.
Yeah, all inspired by Doctor Who. So I'll tell you what, we'll play a song by the Oods, which is all about the episode Listen from the latest season of Doctor Who as we record.
This is a recurring theme. People have the same bad dream. Fear is a constant companion, a family heirloom. See the little orphan boy playing with his soldier toy, hiding, crying there in the darkness, just waiting for you. Don't need to be afraid. Don't need to be afraid. Just listen, it's good. Just listen.
Thank you very much to the Oodcast. If you'd like to hear more from them, you can find them at
theoodcast.com
and on iTunes and pretty much everywhere else that you can also find The Cosmic Shed.
And if you want to find out more about The Cosmic Shed, you can visit
thecosmicshed.com.
Find our episodes on iTunes. If you want to help us out, you can go to Audible and get a free trial and a free audiobook of your choice
by visiting audibletrial.com/thecosmicshed.
And some books we could recommend for this episode. There are loads of Doctor Who audiobooks on there. You can also help us out by going to Patreon, which is a crowdfunding platform. We've made a little video on there. You can check that out by visiting
patreon.com/thecosmicshed. And if we decide to do a Kickstarter for Bruce's Sonic Screwdriver, you can find that at kickstarter.com/observation of orbital angular momentum transfer from bessel-shaped acoustic vortices to diphastic liquid microparticle mixtures. And thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.